We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Glad to have you with us on the College Game Day Podcast. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel here, and we're going to spend some time during this offseason talking to a lot of people across college football, and we're delighted to be joined right now by new Florida Atlantic head coach Tom Herman. Tom, great to have you with us. What's it like to be back in the saddle there?
Thanks, Reese. It's been so much fun. I remember vividly the very moment that I said I need to coach again, and that was when I was trying to be Reese Davis and calling games on CBS Sports, and I was in Denton, Texas for the SMU at North Texas game. And again, mind you, that's not the horseshoe. That's not between the hedges, and no offense to the Mean Green. But I was standing up in the press box, and you know, I watched the band come in. I watched the student section come in. I watched the cheerleaders come in. I watched the teams file in for pregame warmup. And I texted my wife. I said, I miss college football. And it's really, really cool, fun, exciting to be back around players, to be back around young men that, you know, hopefully we can shape in the way that coaches shape me.
Let's start off on a light note. You obviously started your career, Tom, in the media when you were in college. Before you went into coaching, you worked at Fox, and I believe you were also a PA announcer, right? Cal Lutheran PA announcer. That's correct. Who once got thrown out of a game? Is that right? By the umpire.
Yep. All of the above is accurate.
Yes. And you coached for two decades. And went back to the media. I remember you telling me a story last year about that game in Denton. How hard is it to call a college football game? Someone who sat in 10 years of production meetings and done that. I remember there was you have the windows open. You said you were sweating through your shirt. You got a chart with 86 names on it. Like, walk us through a little bit of that learning curve. I think that was kind of a fun.
It was much harder than I thought, and gave me a newfound appreciation for what those guys do. I think, no offense to Reese on the call, I think the color guys have a little bit more on their plate, maybe. As the play-by-play guy, you know, you guys travel with your own spotters and you have this and that and whatnot. I don't want to get too far behind the curtains there, Reese, but it was really, really hard to try to really get to know two teams, both sides of the ball. Like, hey, the right guard is coming off two straight ACL surgeries or whatever, you know, to just have that kind of breadth and depth of your knowledge of each team to feel like you were prepared. I think, you know, it was a bit daunting, to be honest with you.
The art of it for an analyst, in my judgment, is to not just inform or to show the audience how much you know, or even how much you know about football, but to let them learn something and do it in a way that is not talking down to them, yet not at the same time not turning it into a coaching clinic. You know, that's the difficult part, and I think you're right about that, is that part of it is significantly more daunting, I think, for an analyst than it is a play-by-play guy.
Yeah, and not just that, but like you said, Reese, I think you hit the nail on the head, is I never knew what level of football knowledge, you know, the who I was talking to, really. And so, you know, I remember one time defense made a good play, and I said, yeah, they were in cover two there. The corner squatted in the flat and blah, blah, blah. And we go to commercial, and the producer is like, hey, when we come back, talk about what cover two is and what squatting in the flat is. And I'm like, seriously? Like, well, people are watching football and they don't know what cover two is. And he said, yeah. And so I went in, I described what it was, and I think it went over well. But you have a new, I don't know, appreciation for the ones that do it well and that educate America on our great game the way that us as coaches would. You know, and you really have a, once you've sat in that chair, you've got a ton of newfound respect for those guys.
So Florida Atlantic is right now.
You want to laugh, Pete. You want to laugh right now. And you're trying to be really professional, but you want to laugh. It's okay to laugh on a podcast, I think. Yes. I don't know. I've seen Joe Rogan a few times. I heard he's pretty good.
So Florida Atlantic is now a Final Four school. It is a place you have now coached for 4 or 5 months, 6 months, 6 months, I guess. Give us a portrait. You didn't buy Lane Kiffin's house, which would have been more fun if you did. But just give us a sense of, like, you're 6 months in, you're at this place. It's a growing sort of place that's teeming with energy. You've got a good young athletic director there. Obviously, America fell in love with your basketball team over the last 3 months. Just give us a little portrait of where FAU is right now, what attracted you there, and what it can become.
Well, I think we all fell in love with our basketball team. What a run that those guys had, and, you know, the job that Dusty May has done with that program. And to be able, in today's climate, I don't know if we're going to head down the NIL path, but in today's climate, for him to retain basically all of his starters from a Final Four team is remarkable. It shows you the culture and, you know, love and belief and togetherness that they have. Pete, I gotta be honest with you. When I texted Michelle that I miss college football, I knew that that was going to come with some different priorities. And, you know, it's very difficult. Basically, we went into it saying, okay, any job has got to check two boxes. One, you know, I've got a 15-year-old son and a 9-year-old son that are going to move with us, and moving a young man after his freshman year of high school is never easy. So certainly the first box was a place where my family was happy, comfortable, excited about living. And then the second and only other box was, can we win championships? And, you know, I firmly believe that players and coaches win games and administrations win championships. And we have a championship administration in Brian White, Mary Gardenia, our president. We've got a strong donor base that is eager to help. And so we've got a brand new facility that's a year and a half old, basically opened up in 2020, but they didn't get to use it because of COVID. And it's as good. I mean, we didn't have anything like this even at Texas when I first got there. Now they do now because we designed it. But you know, the infrastructure, the people, the administration, the facilities, and then the recruiting base. You know, I think I saw a stat that 85% of the Division I signees that signed out of a Florida high school signed from the three counties that we target the most, which is Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach County. And so if we can kind of do what this place reminds me a lot, Pete, you came to visit us at Houston. It reminds me a ton of the University of Houston. You know, we've got a bunch of two-star, three-star guys with chips on their shoulder that just, you earn their trust, man, and they will run through the wall for you. And they've got something to prove. They're hungry. They know that, you know, 5-7 is not, you know, that's underachieving here. And so anyways, that was a long answer to a short question, but I couldn't be happier. I hope you sense that in my voice.
I was going to follow by saying, you know, we brought up Dusty May and the basketball program and the facilities that you have now. Dusty told a story around the Final Four that when he accepted the Florida Atlantic job and then went and saw some of the things that he would be up against from a facility standpoint, that he felt like he had sabotaged his own career. Pretty emotional about it, by taking and wondering if he had made a catastrophic mistake. Given the fact that you've been at Ohio State and Texas had far more challenges than a lot of people realized, despite their vast resources in terms of keeping up with the Ohio States and Alabamas and Clemsons of the world from a facility standpoint, was there any reservation at any point after you took the job that maybe I should have bided my time, maybe a quote-unquote bigger would have come along?
No. We had quote-unquote bigger this year, this offseason, and we walked away from it because I'm not into chasing paychecks, never have been, and I want to chase winning. And I want to chase opportunity. And I know, I mean, Reese, I appreciate the question, but man, I'm not a silver spoon guy. I'm not a born on third base, thinks he hit a triple guy. I'm an only child of a single mom, played Division III football. I tell people I was so bad at football, I had to pay a small liberal arts school $30,000 a year just to play in college. And so, yeah, I coached Division III. I coached in FCS for 6 years, coached at Rice, coached at Iowa State. So, yeah, this is right in my wheelhouse, I think. And I kind of prefer it that way. And I really get excited about those kind of challenges, and I've been there. I've been at Houston when we couldn't figure out even how to lock the damn doors, you know, because they were 30 years old and they hadn't been locked in 30 years. You know, I've been at Sam Houston when we couldn't afford the little disc to put in the urinals in the men's room to make it smell better. So like, I get it. I get it. And I enjoy it. Now is it work? Yes. It's a lot of work, but I do think that, I don't know, it's the essence of coaching, you know, is, you know, you really get to make an impact on some of these guys that maybe, you know, had you done it at a different level, at a different place, maybe you wouldn't have.
How are you better as a head coach? And let me hasten to say, you had success at Texas. You obviously had success at Houston. But anytime you step away from something, you change, you gain perspective. The year in the NFL, the year in broadcasting, how does that make Tom Herman a better head coach now at FAU than even if you thought you're, which you were a good head coach before. How are you better now, if you are?
Well, I am. I think, you know, having reset my priorities and, you know, maintaining a better work-life balance, just aside from the actual job, I think I've become much, much better at organizing those priorities. And then I think just, man, I wanted to fight the man, and you never win when you fight the man, you know, the man always wins. And, you know, there's an old saying that I had forgotten, to be honest with you, Reese, and that's, you got to do business the way business is done. And I can buck, cry, scream, fight, punch the air, the whole nine, but I'm not going to change college football alone. And I'm not going to change administrations, conferences, donors. And so you kind of have to learn how to play by their rules. And I think I've done a much better job of that this time. And I think the time away has reminded me, do you really have a cough button, Pete? You have a cough button.
I muted it because I had to cough. I have some allergies. So I don't want to interrupt your fine answer, your soliloquy here, and with my hacking. So I thought it was a courtesy. Were you done? Because I can ask you. That's what I was trying to avoid doing, was coughing.
Yeah, probably.
Yes. You're easily distracted, Tom.
No, you distracted the hell out of me, Pete.
So give me or three things now that you're 6 months in at FAU that you are tangibly different as a head coach. These are, you know, I reflected back, and I am doing these two or three things different than I did prior stints as a head coach.
I kind of like Reese's question better.
I'm the specifics guy. I'm the information guy. You know? He's the big thinker. I drill down a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Sources say. Yeah. Got it. I would say I spend more time with the players. I try to be in the locker room, the training room, lunch. You know, all of that. I was on my way to kind of doing that at Texas when COVID hit. You know, I had gone to visit Brian Kelly and know that he kind of, you know, made a significant overhaul of the way that he ran his organization. So I think spending more time with the players, I've always loved players and, you know, because coaches have loved me, but I think sometimes when you build indoor facilities and you get new grass practice fields and you're feeding them better at a place like FAU, sometimes you feel like, well, I'm doing all this for the kids, and you are, but I don't know that the kids ever kind of feel that sense that, you know, what you're really doing behind the scenes. And so not that I needed to go have lunch with Kobe Lewis and go say, hey, you see the new grass we got on the practice field, but it matters. It definitely matters. I think that is one. I think trusting our personnel department a little bit more and allowing, you know, some recruiting decisions to be made, not ever without my stamp, but maybe skipping a few steps that were in place prior. And then you said three, so I want to give you three. I don't yell as much. I think I understand what's important. You know, I still yell, like, don't get me wrong. But I also pride myself now in relaxing. And I remember even at Texas, I mean, that was coming to me. And again, you have to realize that the coaching trees that I came from Paul Rhodes to Urban Meyer and those kind of guys. So, you know, that's just kind of how I knew successful coaching to be. And I take a lot of pride even at, you know, before we left Texas. I remember there was one time where a young man that I was coaching there named Casey Thompson was in practice, and like any school, the quarterbacks are wearing black jerseys, can't touch them, the whole nine. And he took off scrambling and he slid. And I swore to myself, I said, if this were me 4 years ago, I would have undressed that kid in front of his peers. But I think I've come to understand, whether we like it or not, again, I don't, but the sensitivity of today's youth, and you know, that their feelings matter, and right, wrong, or indifferent, like I said way earlier in this soliloquy, that you got to do business the way that business is done. And that's the way of the world these days.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So now that Casey Thompson, a guy that you know well, is there at FAU, what impact do you think he can have on your first season there?
Well, I think a healthy Casey Thompson is better than, you know, anything that FAU has had here for quite some time. And I don't think there's any debate there for a guy that started pretty much an entire season at the University of Texas, an entire season at the University of Nebraska. You know, we saw in him, as well as Cam Rising, in that kind of historic recruiting class of quarterbacks for us. You know, we saw some things in him that maybe others didn't. And I just, he has grown up. He is, and again, Reese, I don't know, quite frankly, I don't care what's legal or not. You know, I've maintained relationships with many, many, many of the young men that we recruited and coached to the University of Texas. And I will till the day I leave this planet, but his growth and maturity and experience has just been really, really fun, exciting to watch. And then for him to feel like he needed one last place to go before his eligibility expired. And for him and Charles and Corey and everybody with everything that he's been through to come back and really trust me and trust us and what we're doing. I'm really proud of that, to be honest with you. And I think it says a lot for, you know, the kind of relationships that we build and we pride ourselves on, that a young man that we started recruiting 8 years ago would feel comfortable enough to come join our program for his last year of college football. And yeah, we take a lot of pride in that. Now, I will tell you this, Daniel Richardson, Ben Ballard, Tyreek Starks, really good players. So Casey's got his work cut out for him. I mean, there's nothing that's going to be handed to him, nor does he want that. And, you know, he's coming off a surgery to his throwing shoulder, which the last quarterback I coached that had a similar surgery was Braxton Miller, and he never really threw the football again. And so, you know, we've got a long ways to go in terms of rehab and functionality. But if we can get Casey to where he has been from a health standpoint, I think he's got a chance to be a really, really good player for us.
I'm going to circle back, Tom, to some of the things you alluded to earlier about chip on your shoulder, underdogs. I'm going to ask you a two-part question here. One is, why do you feel like you are best suited as an underdog? And then two, you had mentioned about, I believe it's one of your guards, I think it's Marquise Robinson, a redshirt senior, whose story particularly struck you. And I'm wondering if you can walk me through Marquise, and I think he sort of epitomizes the kind of player that you've connected with over the years and enjoyed coaching.
I appreciate you bringing Marquise up, and I'll get to him in a second. I don't know, Pete. I mean, I guess probably for, you know, why do I gravitate towards these kind of players? I think probably because I see a lot of me in them. You know, I got my degree in business, not psychology. So I'm not exactly sure, you know, the psychology behind it, but it's just a very, when you see a guy like Elandon Roberts go from Morgan State to walk on transfer at Houston to seventh round pick by Bill Belichick to then starting at Mike linebacker as a rookie for the world champion New England Patriots and win the Super Bowl in your hometown of Houston. Like, I mean, how does that not get you fired up? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that have had much easier paths and upbringings, and everybody has challenges. But man, when you see young men overcome obstacles, it's very motivating. Let's just put it that way. And yeah, Marquise, please, everybody, watch for number 75 for the Florida Atlantic Owls. He'll be playing right guard. Not many people watch the right guard. But he's also the youngest of five boys. And all four of his older brothers, none of them made it past the 10th grade. Two of them are currently incarcerated. The other two have been at some point in their life or another. And Marquise got married last summer. He walked across the stage with a college degree in December, and him and his wife just celebrated the birth of their first child in March. And so, I mean, guys, if that's not why we're doing this, then we need to look ourselves in the mirror. I mean, the power of college athletics is alive and well, and it is absolutely making a difference in Boca Raton for some of these young men and their lives.
I think most of us are in favor of NIL, players getting something. When you look at the big picture of this, without sacrificing that, there is a move toward perhaps, you know, more professionalization, contracts, which would, and you've got the son of another one.
What do we have here, Tom?
Too. I hope people are watching on YouTube
this
right
is
now.
Lyder, who you got Lyder with Lewis. You? Toby Lewis's 5-month-old son.
Yeah, he looks like he could compete with young Teddy. That'd be a pretty good sumo match in the playpen.
That's why I'm telling you, dude. Like, you need to bring Teddy to Boca Raton, and we'll get like a healthy fight going around in the wrestling mat.
These stories like that, you holding Kobe's son, the story you just told. And I, look, I'm all for players making whatever they can. I think the market will settle a lot of this. But when you let the market settle things, there is a professionalization aspect that comes into play. There's a bottom line aspect. There's more concern about how productive is this player if we're going to keep him around. How does that threaten the type of thing? Threaten's the wrong word. How does that impact the type of things that you're talking about that college sports can give opportunities to people to elevate their station in life, to overcome difficult circumstances, if it does at all?
You know, as we all know, the majority of young men that play college football aren't going to make a penny off of this game, whether that's name, image, and likeness, whether that's professional, but they are going to get a piece of paper, hopefully, and an education that nobody will ever be able to take away from them. And I don't ever want to lose sight of the value of that. Now, I've got a funny story. I don't know that I've ever told it publicly, but when I was at Ohio State, Pete, you may remember this, but Braxton Miller went and, you know, accepted an award, and he had what appeared to be a Louis Vuitton belt. Apparently those are expensive. I don't know.
I get mine at Marshall's, so I don't know.
But well, yeah, you get everything at Marshall's, Pete. We get called, me and Braxton, we get called into Gene Smith's office, and, you know, hey, somebody had emailed wondering how a college student can have a $750 belt. And Braxton said, "Coach, this is a knockoff. I paid $25 for this." And it got me thinking, like, okay, where are we at? And this is 10 years ago, Reese. I went to NCAA.org. And Pete, I don't know if I've ever even told you this story. And the .org, I thought, meant nonprofit, right? Anytime you see .org at the end of a website, it should be a not-for-profit organization. And I went on their shop, if you will, their virtual store. And, you know, for years, people had been skirting the name, image, and likeness by just using jersey numbers, right? Well, we all know who wears this number and that number. But this was so blatant that on the NCAA website, they're probably going to slap me with some kind of level 3 violation for telling this story. But the website said, number 5 Ohio State Braxton Miller jersey. And I thought to myself, this is not right. This is not right that this kid has to get called into the, you know, for lack of a better term, gets called into the principal's office with his coach to explain a $25 knockoff belt. And yet the NCAA, a nonprofit organization, is benefiting from his name and his jersey number. And it just felt wrong to me, Reese. That is wrong. And so, but now we're here, and we have, sometimes the NCAA can be ready, fire, aim. And, we get panicked into making decisions. And I don't think we fully understand the consequences of those decisions. And when the decision to let young players profit off their name, image, and likeness, I think we all had the best intentions of the world. We wanted to prevent what was happening to Braxton Miller ever happening again. But as we all know, what has happened is it has become a recruiting inducement. And I fear that places like FAU, places like Houston are going to become farm leagues for, the 15 highest grossing collectives in the country. And that worries me about our sport. And I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in the tube. I really don't. I wish I had better answers for you. But do I believe in NIL? Absolutely. I think any human being walking the planet, if the market tells you your value is this, then you should be able to command that value. But when it turns into recruiting, that's when it goes down a slippery slope that I don't know that we can crawl back up from,
Yeah. The one thing I would say is the NCAA, and they can't hit me with a level 3 violation. they didn't decide to do it out of the goodness of their heart. They fought it to the Supreme Court and got trounced
for 20 years.
And now, yes. Yeah. And now they're afraid, they're afraid to do anything about it.
Please, and I'm not really they're afraid sure of their own shadow. Let's call it what it is. The threat of lawsuits is what's driving the legislation of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And I don't know. I'm 47. I'm not 27. I don't, if they fire me tomorrow, I'll be all right. But man, I just think, our sport needs a reset button. It really does.
What would be the first thing you would do if you could hit that reset button? What would it be?
I've never thought about that. I've always been the guy presenting the problems, never the solution.
Well, the guy who's doing business.
I know.
Is done,
yeah.
Right?
I would be yelling at my assistants right now.
but I mean, I think it does underscore some of the difficulties, because you hear people say, well, put rules in place. Well, if they put rules in place, there are going to be more lawsuits. So the only way, and I'm not astute. I'm not a legal scholar. I've read and studied about this and talked to a lot of people about it. The only way forward I see is collective bargaining. Now, whether that's with a trade association type thing for the players or something like that. But the other problem, the other facet that you brought up, I don't have a good answer for, is what it does to FAU, Houston, UAB, to keep them from being farm systems. And I know you're probably not going to like this take. I still haven't come to terms with whether that's necessarily a bad thing, because I left Columbus, Georgia to go to Flint, Michigan because it was a better job. And I left Flint, Michigan to go to ESPN because it was a better job. It was better for my career path.
I left Ames, Iowa to go to Columbus, Ohio. I get it.
Yeah. So it's a difficult thing because there are unintended consequences no matter which path you take to try to make it best for all.
Yeah, I would say a couple things probably. One is when you were making those decisions, you were an adult with a college degree, and you had kind of earned that right to go where you wanted to go and do what you wanted to do. But you also had a choice in that too. And you could have stayed had you not wanted, you know, had moving been not your cup of tea at the time. It is hard for me to fathom a world of college athletics where a school in the Atlantic Coast Conference that has been, you know, a middle of the pack program for a long time, and with a head coach that I respect tremendously, and they find a diamond in the rough receiver and recruit him, develop him, and then he leaves after 2 years. And that's a tough pill for me to swallow. Does that kid have the right to do that? He absolutely does. Like, I don't want to disparage any of the rights that these young men have, but I think if we told every team in the NFL that you had to have 85 guys on 1 year contracts, I think they would laugh in your face, you know? And that's what we have right now, is we have 85 guys on 1 year contracts that can leave at any time they want. And can my DB coach and offensive coordinator, they can too. Yeah. I get that, but it's, man, I don't know. Like if this is the route we want to go, then let's sign contracts. Let's have, you know, multi-year, you know, agreements to where both parties involved are protected. And I don't know that. I know that we're not there right now.
College football is changing the last year of the current playoff structure. And after this year, Florida Atlantic, other programs like them, have a viable path to get into the college football playoff. How does that impact your ability to maybe compete with the upper echelon in terms of resources for player retention and potentially compete with them on the field too?
Again, I hate to draw similarities to the University of Houston too often, but the programs are very similar in terms of the timing of when we took them over. And, you know, are we going to beat Florida and Florida State on an in-state kid or Alabama? Like, probably not. Probably not in recruiting. We're going to try, but the odds are that we're not. But what we need to make sure is that in these three counties that make up basically, you know, 85% of the Division I signees in the state of Florida, we need to make sure that a middle of the road, quote unquote, Power Five team, you know, from Oregon or Indiana or whatever, does not, you know, when they come into the Tri-County area, they're going to be in for a fight. And when it comes to recruiting, and we're going to make Florida Atlantic
you know, the really, really cool place to go. And I think you don't need to look any further than what we did at Houston when we signed Ed Oliver, who was still the only five-star recruit to ever sign with a group of five school. And, you know, I think he's a testament to knowing. He said, you know, if you ask Ed, and he doesn't need to be any more complicated than this. He just said, Coach, I was going to play in the NFL no matter where I went to college. So why not play at home, represent my city, represent my hometown, you know, while I prepare for the National Football League. And I think when we get to that point here at Florida Atlantic, which I think that we can very shortly, you know, you look at Houston, you look at Cincinnati, you look at UCF. I mean, guys, it's been done, you know, and there isn't, you're not selling hope anymore. You're selling reality. And I think that's maybe the biggest thing, is that you've got these examples in Houston, in UCF, in Cincinnati, and now with the playoffs going to 12 teams, it's not just hope. It's truly reality, Reese.
Let's wrap with this, Tom. And you've been generous with your time. We appreciate it. I believe you open with Monmouth and then Ohio, who's very good and has a very good quarterback if he's healthy, Nathan Rourke coming back. And then you go to Clemson on September 16th. I believe as a group of five coach, you are 5-0 at playing Power Five programs. Just what can this season of FAU be? The great Bill Connolly had you going into spring, and obviously things change, with 83% of your returning production. You bring in Casey Thompson, bunch of transfers, like everybody else. Just what can this first edition of Tom Herman's FAU Owls be?
I talked to Phil Steele this morning. Is Bill Connolly similar to
Bill? Phil is more Steele, analytic like driven. Yeah,
and Bill works Bill for is us more and analytics driven.
I gotcha. Okay.
Wow.
That's, he's better that's than on Bill air Steele. Forever, I prefer Bill Connolly to Phil Steele.
All right. You can't erase that, dude. You can't erase that. Trust me. There's a lot of out there that I can't erase too. So it's all good.
So much for Peach Free Magazine.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. You're gonna have to pay $7.99 now at Walmart for that damn thing.
It's like $12.99, but the thing makes you go cross-eyed. The fonts are so small. Bill Connolly, the fonts are perfect.
You asked what can we be. I think, you know, based on, you know, what we've been able to do as a program, not just me as a head coach, but the people that I have surrounded myself with in this program, you know, we didn't beat number three Oklahoma, number three Louisville, number eight Florida State. Not that I remember all of their rankings when we played them, but we didn't do that because we had better players. We had really good players, don't get me wrong. But none of those head coaches would trade rosters with me. I know that. I mean, you're talking about, man, I saw Jalen Ramsey in pregame warmups and I was worried to even bring my team out. You know, I mean, that guy is he's just an incredible human specimen and a great player too. And so how do you win those games? You win them by, you out physical people and you out love them. And I know that's, you're rolling your eyes probably right now in Boston and Reese and Pontevedra or, you know, and, or Storrs, Connecticut or wherever that is. But man, I'm just telling you, you know, the things that human beings are capable of doing because of genuine love
it's remarkable. It's why you hear of mind over matter, why you hear of a woman whose child gets hit by a car and she lifts the car off of the child. It's why I use the example all the time. You know, if I'm sitting at home by myself and two guys with ski masks comes in and point a gun at me, you know what I'm doing? I'm running. Like, I don't like my house that much. Now you put Michelle and my three kids behind me and now we're fighting. And you're going to have a fight to the death. And I'm not asking these kids, we're not asking these kids to fight to the death by any stretch. But I think if you can kind of formulate that vision in your head of the things that motivate human beings, man, it is powerful. And we feel that the two greatest motivating factors are love and fear, and love wins every time. You know, when I'm by myself, I'm fearful and I run when those two guys come in my house. When you put Michelle, Priya, TD, and Maverick behind me, what motivates me is love, and I fight. And I think, to answer your question, Pete, I think that if we can develop the kind of brotherhood, the kind of love, and let's not forget the physicality. You know, I'll never forget when we beat number three Oklahoma to open the season. I mean, we were getting our butts kicked in the first quarter. And one of our safeties came downhill. Baker Mayfield threw a swing pass to Samaje Perine. And one of our safeties just absolutely, he hit him really hard, Pete and Reese. And Samaje Perine didn't come back in the game. And he played the next week. So I'm not quite sure what kept him out the rest of that game. But it was a turning point for us in that game. And I think there's the power of physicality and knowing that you're at the end of the day, this game is still about moving another human being somewhere he doesn't want to go against his will. And that hopefully will never change. And, you know, as long as it doesn't, we're going to practice that way. You can't practice soft and play hard. You know, we're going to practice really, really hard, and we're going to love each other a ton. And I think I'm not into prognosticating, Pedro, but if we can accomplish those two things, then we're going to have a heck of a season.
Well, it's great that you've moved your way back into college football. Congratulations on the job, and we're really looking forward to seeing the Owls play this season. Tom, thanks for spending so much time with us. We're much appreciated.
Thanks, Reese. Appreciate you. Pete, appreciate you. Sarah, nice to meet you. Schwenk, I don't even know your real name. Nice to meet you.
It's Mr. Schwenk.
Mr. Schwenk. I'm going to call him Coach Schwenk, by the way. Coach.
Yeah, there you go.
We appreciate Tom Herman spending so much time with us right now. Look forward to seeing his team on the field this fall. And we are, depending on when you downloaded this, inside 100 days until week zero, or maybe exactly 100 days. Thanks for listening. You can get the College Game Day podcast wherever you prefer to download your podcasts.